Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as always, with me is Sai Prakash. We also have Professor Venkatraman, who has been joining us the last few weeks as we discuss the chapters of Prema Vahini. In the last four episodes, we discussed chapter 13 of Prema Vahini. And today we move on to chapter 14. And as we begin the chapter 14, let's offer our prayers at Bhagwan's lotus feet and pray that he guides us through this discussion. So I begin this session with prayers and the signature tune of Vahini Satsang. So let's now listen to the first segment of chapter 14.
మానవుల రక్షించునది, శాంతి చేకూర్చునది ఋషుల బోధనలు తప్ప వేరొండు లేదు. మానవుడు బాహ్యరీతిగా పరిగించున్నది సత్యము కాదు. మానవులు పైఛాయ చూచి అదే వస్తువు అనుకుంటున్నారు. ఒడ్డు, పొడవు, వెడల్పు చూచి వస్తువు అనుకునిచున్నారు. వస్తువు వికారమును చూచి వస్తువుని మోసపోచున్నారు. ఛాయను చూసి వస్తువుని భ్రమించు ఇప్పటి జ్ఞానము జ్ఞానమగునా? తోలుబొమ్మను చూచి మనిషిని తలంచిన జ్ఞానమగునా? అన్ని వస్తువులు మనం చూచుచుంటిమని అనుకున్నదేదో అది వస్తువు కాదు. అన్నీ తెలుసుకుంటిమని అనుకునుచున్నదేదో అది పదార్థము కాదు.
Men see the shadow and take it to be the substance. They see the length, breadth and height and jump to the conclusion that they have an object before them. Man is deluded into believing the shadow as the real object. This mistaking of appearance for reality is misnamed as jnana. How can it ever be jnana? Can the image of a person ever be he? If the image is taken to be he, can we call it knowledge? Such is the nature of all knowledge now. What is cognized as an object is not real at all. Its reality is not cognizable.
So here we have Bhagwan saying how often we mistake the shadow to be the real thing. How we think of the superficial as the actual and the real. And what we often consider as knowledge is not knowledge. Perhaps it is just information. So sir, if you can share your thoughts and throw some light on how to distinguish between what is real and what is not. What is knowledge and what is not. Unless Sai Prakash has any other question.
I think this whole paragraph is about the nature of reality. Yeah. And I think it has several perspectives depending on which perspective you are looking from. But we would really like to hear from sir, how do we actually go about trying to understand this?
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak. I hope I am clear and reasonably loud. Because age is a factor. Now, when I heard the Telugu version, although I heard it only very quickly and briefly, I had a feeling it conveyed a slightly different meaning from the English translation. I'm not complaining. This is what we have. We have to go with it. So what I shall do is the following. Somewhere there was a mention of shadow. Obviously, a shadow can be cast only by a real object.
Yes.
If I am standing there, there will be a shadow of me. Otherwise, there is no shadow. I am mentioning this because when you mistake shadow for the real thing, there is a physical object which casts a shadow. When I go to the spiritual realm, the question was asked something about reality and what we mistake to be the reality.
Correct.
That is a far more difficult question. Because spiritually, what happens there between the source and reality is different. Here we are comparing a material object with a shadow. This analogy is fit only for the material world. So when you go to spirituality, what we see are names and forms. And these are both associated with objects. A tree is there. Tree existed long before we came on earth. And nobody knew what to call it. It was there. There was a form. Then we went and gave a name. And then we created an association. So much so later on, if I say tree, you can imagine a generic tree. And if I take a piece of paper and draw something like a tree, a three-year-old child will say tree. It's remarkable. It's not at all looking like a tree. I mean, if I draw it, it won't look like a tree for sure. It is able to correlate name and form elsewhere and see a line drawing on a two-dimensional paper and immediately say something.
Correct.
There is a certain connection that happens. Whereas, when we talk of reality, we are talking of the ultimate reality, which is beyond the mind and the senses. And all our thinking is done with the mind. So how do you go from here to there? That is the real issue.
Correct.
And what Swami is saying is, if you have not understood that, then you ain't understood anything. He's not putting it that way. But that's what I'm trying to say. So, here many ideas come to my mind, many thoughts come to my mind. Even in this world, without talking about spirituality, I can go from one level to an abstract level, which we have no, what you call, form and all that, but it has a meaning nevertheless. In real life, we started with numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1%, 2%, 3%, 4 brothers. I have 5 brothers. The concept of numbers came from practical experience.
Correct.
Okay. So I go on writing this. Then, when I go to college, I am taught algebra. Instead of saying 1, 2, 3, 4, I say A, B, C, D. A, B, C, D. In English, I use A, B, C, D, but generally that's what is done the whole world. Even in Russia, though they write everything in Cyrillic, all these mathematical symbols are same. No, mathematics goes on becoming more and more abstract. And at some stage, it's all concepts. And that has nothing to, I can talk about those concepts. I can talk about an n-dimensional space, discrete space, continuous space. I can do all sorts of things. That is just my imagination. But it turns out very often, for some strange reason, all of them become relevant somewhere or the other.
Mm.
So from what I'm trying to say is, I start with numbers and go there. Suppose I'm there at that abstract level. With imaginary numbers and so on and so forth. When I come down, I cannot come down from there to the numbers. Because numbers belong to a level where we have a table, this pair of spectacles, this mic, I can count, this is one, this is count, this is different from each other. So there is what you call something in this creation where you can go from the real to the abstract. And when you come from the abstract to what we call real, there is a jump that has to be made. That is the process of creation. From creation, I can go back to the abstract. From abstract, it has to come down to creation. And that brings in the story of creation. How did this creation come?
Absolutely.
So in Vedanta, that is done by saying Akshara Brahman divided into Miksa Sankalpa, made it to consciousness and energy. Consciousness is called Shiva, energy is called Prakriti, and so on. So those are models. That is a ladder. So really speaking, ultimately Swami wants us to go from here to there. So he is asking, have you learned the things, how to go from here to there? So that is what it is. Maybe we can take a little here, unless you want to ask questions, we can go to the next thing, and because there something is coming.
Okay, so let's listen to the second segment. Mm-hmm.
ఆత్మ పరబ్రహ్మయని అద్వైతి ఎరుగును, తానే బ్రహ్మయని అతడెరుగును. ఎట్లెరుగును? గురుడు అట్లు బోధించటం వల్ల, శృతులు అట్లు శాసించటం వల్ల ఈ ఎరుక మాత్రం విజ్ఞానమగునా? కానేరదు. తానే బ్రహ్మము. ఈ రెండు మాటలకే అర్థం తెలిసిన తోడనే బ్రహ్మైక్యదశ సిద్ధించునా? అనేక జన్మలుగా ఎడతెరిపి లేకుండా వేదవిహితములకు సర్వకార్యములు నొచ్చి చిత్తశుద్ధి విరాగములుంది, అందువలన భక్తి అంకురమును గాంచి దానిని పెంచి క్రమక్రమంగా బలపరచి పుష్పింపచేసి తుదకు ఫలింపచేసి ఆ పండు మంచి పరిపక్వదశ నుందునప్పుడు దాని నుండి వెలువడు అనుభవ మహాపరిమళం సాధించి దానితో చిరకాలం కలసి మెలసి అనుభవమును వ్యాపింపచేసిన సర్వవస్తువులందున్న సర్వదిక్కులు వ్యాపించియున్న అగమ్యగోచరమైన జగద్వ్యాపి అయిన ఆ పరమశక్తితో ఐక్యం కావచ్చునే కాని ప్రపంచమననేమో తెలియక, తానెవరో అసలే తెలియక, బ్రహ్మమనగా మొదలే తెలియక, అహం బ్రహ్మాస్మి శబ్దమునకు వర్ణక్రమము తెలిసినంత మాత్రమున నరుడు ప్రజ్ఞానావస్థనుండగలడా? శబ్దార్థ జ్ఞానము ప్రధానం కాదు. ఆ ఎరుకయే ఎరుక కాదు, అనుభవజ్ఞానముండవలను.
ది అద్వైతిన్ బిలీవ్స్ అహం బ్రహ్మాస్మి, I am Brahman. How has he acquired that conviction? Why does he state so? Ask him and the reply is, the Shruti declares so. The Guru taught like that. But learning it from these sources does not entitle him to make that profound statement. If a person is a master of these three words, Aham, Brahma and Asmi, does he attain the unity with Brahman? The answer is no. Ceaseless striving through countless births and loyal performance of scriptural duties, these purify the mind. In such a mind, seeds of devotion sprout, and when tended with care and knowledge, flowers bloom, fruits appear and ripen, and get filled with sweetness and fragrance. When the fruit is eaten, man becomes one with the Supreme, the power that permeates all things, all religions, and which is eternally present and conscious and blissful. A person may enunciate the formula Aham Brahmasmi correctly, etymology may be perfect, but when he is ignorant of the world, unaware of the I, and completely in the dark about Brahman, can he ever taste the rare joy of a jnani? It is not mastery of words and their meaning that counts. It is awareness and experience. These are the fundamentals.
Heavy segment.
How many kilos?
3 kilos. Aham Brahma Asmi.
One hopes it was really that easy.
So it's very interesting because the first thing that came to my mind was in the first segment, Swami's talking about what reality is. The second segment, he says, just by using the words Aham Brahmasmi, that doesn't mean you have the experience of what it actually means. You just know the grammar of what it is. Mm-hmm. So it's not enough just knowing the grammar, you need to have an experience, which is I don't know how it can be quantified.
In fact, I was when I heard this, I just remembered one anecdote that Swami used to narrate about Max Muller. You know, when this IS, in those days, ICS officer, he went to England and Max Muller was there, and Swami says that Max Muller, always fascinated with India, was studying the Vedas, and he had great respect for Indians and all the scriptures. And so when he heard that this man of high repute and education wants to meet him, he was ecstatic because he was struggling to translate the Vedas. And so this person goes there and he gives his card, and he sees the card. It's written, his name is Chaturveda Amareshwara Shastri. And he says, oh my God, fantastic. I've got someone who understands all the four Vedas, Chaturveda. And so he welcomes him and he says, you know what, I was doing this translation and you're God sent. You have just come at the right time. So, you know, I'm struggling with this. Please help me. He says, Vedas, I have no clue. I don't know anything about Vedas. And then Max Muller says, I mean, he's so shocked. He says, what is this? Having come from India and bearing the name Chaturveda Shastri, you don't know about Vedas? Then he says, it is really my bad luck that I met such a person. But I was just reminded of this because, as Swami says, just because, you know, you have that name, that doesn't mean anything. Similarly here, just because you can utter Aham Brahmasmi, it doesn't mean you have understood anything unless you really go through it and experience at least an iota of what that means.
So we are awaiting your thoughts on this.
I was trying to let time pass. Your talk. See, this brings up a very important issue. Let me start with the ultimate Advaitic thing, which is supposed to be this highly transcendental. When the word dental, Charir Kaurav mentioned transcendental, here we have the dental. So, let me start with something we have all heard, but hardly bothered about. The statement is often attributed to Shankara. Mm-hmm. Jagat Mityam Brahma Satyam.
Yes.
This world is an illusion, Brahman alone is truth. Okay. I can talk like that as long as people are there to invite me. Okay.
And I collect my salary after the talk.
Salary is fixed. You have to pay income tax. Here you say Sanmanam. Okay. That is different. I can ask for the moon. So, Swami has commented on this. That's why I'm bringing it up. He says scholars talk a lot of rubbish. Brahma Satyam is ultimate reality. But then, this world cannot be dismissed as what you call unreal. It is unreal in a certain sense. Compared to that, this is unreal. Because it is going to be transient.
Yes.
That is the main point of unreal. Reality exists forever, neither beginning nor end. Here, this dies, at least where every individual is concerned, it exists from birth to death. And that's why Buddhists and all say, there is nothing before birth, there is nothing after birth. And those are what you call kind of peculiar philosophies. Swami says, this world has an empirical reality. You cannot dismiss that.
Absolutely.
And empirical reality is a very difficult thing to deal with because it is in this so-called unreal world that the business of dharma and adharma exists. Not in that world. That's non-dual. This is dual. And I can go on giving talks, but there are people who have to solve problems. And the problems that are illustrated by the Mahabharata, issues people had to deal with, like Bhishma and all that, they are real difficult problems. The problems of the state, problems of war and peace, problems of dharma and adharma. Greed, selfishness, jealousy, all these things come. So how do you deal with it? It continues to this day. And you have to make sure you take calculated decisions. And it becomes very difficult. So, he says, you must remember that you have to make decisions and make sure things are all right. That's why he gives prescriptions. Now, there was something I wanted to say, maybe it'll come back. Let us go from the empirical reality aspects to the ultimate reality. Swami has made some comments about this. Often, while giving a discourse, suddenly you'll stop and say, this microphone is God. Then you'll take the lid of a silver tumbler and say, this lid is God. This tumbler is God. This table is God. So on it'll go. So I was not able to figure out what he was trying to say. Everything is God. One day, in one of the discourses, suddenly he stopped. Waved his hand and out came a lemon. Yellow lemon. Yes. He asked, what is this? Everybody said lemon. He just left his, opened his fingers and the lemon fell, rolled, went down. Somebody, boy sitting in the front row, brought it and put it on the table. This is not level. Lemon. This is consciousness, he said. I wanted to say, really? But he kept on saying that. The reason is, even though you see a lemon, even though you cut it and make juice out of it, if you keep on remembering that everything came from God, you will slowly learn to give it the respect you give to God. Second thing is, you will not hurt anything. So, unless I see God everywhere, I can easily, this is not God, this is some fellow whom I don't like. So on and so forth. But that is very difficult for us. So, he takes that issue up in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks, you said so many things, I don't know, I'm lost. How does one reach you? 12th chapter, that's how it begins. Krishna says there are two ways. Essentially, the first line is about yogic path. And then, but for ordinary Joes like you, there is another path. So he starts talking about the bhakti yoga. So the point is, if I follow that, I don't have to do concrete, what I call, very difficult things. I am Brahmasmi and all is for yogis. I don't have to do that. I may even get lost in that, becoming full of ego. I am greater Brahmasmi than you are. So you go to court and all
Lesho that. He says, very difficult path in the Bhagavad Gita.
So, you have to ultimately chant the name of the Lord, somehow think of me. Here, I am reminded of one or two things about this world and that world. One relates to Vivekananda. I had the collected works of Vivekananda, which I bought when I was in Hyderabad from the Ramakrishna Mission. I went there one day and bought a whole set. It was a low price because of the centenary or something. And all that got scattered away. But one thing I read there, stuck in my mind. He was young Narendranath, still studying in college, and his family was saying, don't get a job and all that. So he's going to see Thakur Sahib. That is the name by which they all called Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. What is this? He goes on saying everything is Atma. This tree is Atma. Then he goes past the Victoria Memorial. That's a big thing there. And there's an iron gate. This gate is Atma. He kicks it. Oh, my pain. This Atma is causing pain to me. Oh. What kind of an Atma is it and all that? So he goes there. And Thakur Savarayan, how are you and all that? Then he goes and touches him. Just like that. And then he says, suddenly I saw everything breaking and disappearing. The walls, this, that. And soon there was nothing except himself. And he's saying, I don't know what's happening, but I am feeling very blissful, and so on and so forth. Then Thakur taps him, and he comes back. He said, why didn't you let me be there? And Ramakrishna's answer in today's language was, that was a free sample. Okay? Now you pay first and then correct later. Promotion, free sample. And actually, the only other time he seems to have had that blissful trance was when he visited America. He came to northern New York State. I've been there. There are very beautiful lakes there. There is another, I went to a lake called Lake Placid, Lake Peaceful. But there was another lake. And he went into a trance. And there is a plaque there. There is a house. They still have those things there. This way he had this. So the point is, he could experience reality. Because it's experiential. Okay. But I'm an ordinary Joe. What do? I'm a truck driver. What the hell do I do? Then he says, people do meditation. Vivekananda said something simple. Constant remembrance of Lord is also meditation. Constant remembrance means that ultimately boils down to Namasmarana. And here I'm reminded of an incident, narrated to me by Mr. Nanjundaya, our formal controller, who also used to translate Swami's discourses. When Swami was in Hyderabad, in Shivam, and Mr. Nanjundaya went there, and because he was known to Swami, he had access. He went upstairs, Swami's room area. Kamavadani was a sort of priest cum scholar and all that. Everything rolled into one. He was chanting the Rudram. After some time, door opened, Swami came. He was having his bath and he was just drying up with this thing. And he saw Nanjundaya, Amy Nanjundaya, Eppuruchavu, Uttapati Etlavandi, and all those things. Casual thing. Questions he asked. And Mr. Nanjundaya said, Swami, I wish I knew the Vedas. Why are you saying that? He says, when Shiva is, when Shiva, Abhishekam is done to Shiva, you chant Rudram. You are having a bath and here come out, then you are chanting Rudram. I wish I could have chanted it. Swami looks at Kamavadani and he asks him in Telugu, Kamavadani, is there anything greater than the Vedas? And Kamavadani says, what, Swami? Oh, what are you saying? And what is greater than the Vedas? Your name, Swami. Ni namame melu, ni namame chalu. So, that was what essentially the Vivekananda said, constant remembrance. And what Swami, you know, if you look through that, how often he talks about Namasmarana.
Absolutely.
And I am told that a foreigner told Swami, I cannot remember all these Sanskrit names. You tell me something. Very simple. You just say, Swami, I love you. And the point is, and the meaning of that is very beautifully brought out in the bhajan, which I like very much. Govinda bolo, Gopal bolo. In that you say, Jo naam chahe, wo naam bolo. Prem se bolo, bhav se bolo.
Correct.
You can chant whatever name you want, but do it with love for me and with feeling. And the idea of feeling becomes very important, because when a person is deaf, the person also becomes dumb because there is no way of learning the language unless it has happened a little later. But they also have feelings. When I went to Australia, I stayed with Douglas in Brisbane, and he used to go 40 miles every Thursday to the house of an old farmer who came here to Swami in 1980s or something like that, even earlier. But they are poor, they don't go anywhere. It's an old-fashioned house in a farm. And because I was coming, a lot of people had gathered. By that time, my TV serial was very popular and a lot of people came. Apart from one other Tamilian who was in the IT business who came there, I was the only Indian. There were no others. And there was a blind lady who came. She said, "I don't know, come here, I want to touch you and see whether you really exist." And there's a deaf and dumb lady. They saw the bhajan singing and all that. They were moved along with it. So there is the feeling, dimension of feeling, which is what you have to awaken. And that feeling must be steered in the right direction. And that is possible for the ordinary Joe, provided you don't get distracted. It calls for a lot of practice and so on. But it is possible. That is the assurance. I'm not going to leave you in the lurch. You just chant my name. And so this is what I would like to say at this point. If there are questions, let's try to discuss them.
In fact, very beautifully you summarized what is given in the chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita. Because there he says exactly the same thing. Mayeva manadastva, mai buddhim niveshaya, nivesishyasi mayeva ata urdvam na samshaya. Think of me all the time and live in my consciousness.
Not only that, he also says, advesta sarva bhutanam maitra karnaya nirmamo nirankara then
samadukha sukakshami.
Yeah. But it's very interesting. There is a speech given by Abraham Lincoln, which is by-hearted by all the Americans. Mm-hmm. They have to chant it. His speech at Gettysburg. Gettysburg was in Pennsylvania where they had the last big fight, Civil War. 50,000 people or so died. And then, in that, he says, he begins 80 years ago, our ancestors, with malice to none and friendship to all.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, I always wondered, malice to none, advesta sarvabhutanam, maitra karnacha, malice to none and friendship to all, by Abraham Lincoln. Incidentally, talking of Abraham Lincoln, you all must be knowing, because of our close association with one gentleman named Mr. Nandwani,
yes,
from Panama.
Yes.
So, some years ago when he came and I talked to him, he said he came here by chance. He had come for his honeymoon. He got married in Bombay and then he came to Bangalore. And somebody said, "We are going to see Sai Baba." So he left his wife and went to Vrindavan and all that. Then he came here and Swami called him upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
In small room, you know, just above the interview room. There was a small mantel place. Like in the interview room, there will be some things, clock and
vibhuti. On the window, yes.
He said, he saw a photo of Abraham Lincoln.
Oh.
He saw that. No, it could be true, I don't know, but that's what he told me.
As early as 60s or
68.
70s? Oh, okay.
So, you know, he acts like a human. He acts like a human. He said a lot of things about Lincoln and all that. But I always say, why did he say that? Because the God whom we believe is also in his heart.
Yes.
Why did Shakespeare write, "Above all, to thine own self be true"? Who is this true? How did he know Advaitam? Where did it come from? So that spark of the divine is in everything, even the vilest of man. It is there. That's why he say, "Howsoever a sinner you are, seek refuge in me, I'll wash your sins." And that washing the sins, incidentally, is something that goes through janma to janma to janma to janma. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, just before the last janma, and the last janma will be where, one, where I'll put you in a certain circumstance, and you will have to come from that to me. And it will be different for two different kind of people. If you see Ramakrishna, he was sort of born in a pious family and he came from there. Vivekananda was born in a worldly family and he had to come from there. That was their last step. But they both went there because their goal was the same. Many of these things get illustrated when you go to the Bhagavad Gita.
Sir, the second paragraph that we read out today, there was a very interesting this thing where Swami says that ceaseless striving birth after birth.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly, and then he says that is when the mind is purified. And then the sprout of devotion comes. And then it flowers and blossoms and all that. My question is there a sense of inevitability that everybody has to reach that state someday or the other? And how, what is our role? Can we hasten it or can we, advance it? What is the role of sadhana in that sense?
Okay, that's a very good question. You see, this relates to what is called evolution. If you take a mango fruit, first it was a flower, then it became a small, this thing, I don't know, raw fruit. It will be a few centimeters, and it is very bitter at that time.
Right.
Slightly bigger, 2-3 centimeters, if the mango is of good variety, it is kind of lemon-like.
Yes.
And we make the vadumanga in South India.
You pickle.
Pickle sort of. And you let it grow, finally it becomes ripe.
Yes.
So, you are essentially referring to ripening process.
Right.
And that ripening process, while it happens in a natural fashion in the case of the mango, has to be steered.
Okay.
There is a reason for this. Since we have come through Prakriti, we have the Prakriti Lakshanas. The Prakriti Lakshanas are needed. There is nothing wrong with them. Because Tamas means what you call rest. Rajas means activity. Sattva means peacefulness. Now, if you take a tiger, when it sleeps, it sleeps. That is tamas. It is needed for the body. Rajas, it is a very active task to go and kill a deer and eat. After it eats, a deer can graze near it. Won't hurt it. It eats in order to fill its belly. And this is very common. Even if you see African safari movies and all that, lion will be sitting there, deer will be grazing. They know it. So it is not greedy and all that. So this is what you call hardwired in an animal.
Okay.
Okay.
Basic necessities.
So it is something like a programmed PLC, programmable logic controller with limited capabilities. But when it comes to humans, the so-called program which resides in the brain becomes amplified into a mind. So it gets a lot more flexibility. It slows, it's more like a computer. And depending on what kind of OS you put, it'll be either having virus or not virus. So you will have to go through that.
Okay.
Basically, tamas in a human being is reflected in a particular way. I think the 17th chapter of the Gita, Krishna talks about it. How that fellow will speak, how the fellow will behave, how he will eat, and so on and so forth. Tamogunam.
Correct.
Then Rajogunam, hyperactive. What the hell, you can't do it. I can do everything. I can lick anybody in this town. Very clever. Right from cheating to technology. Hyperactive. Then he becomes Sattvic. Sattvic means, as Swami says, Sattvic as a person with Sattva Guna is desirable. But even he is bounded by a golden rope. Steel rope, silver rope, golden rope. Because he says, when I die, I want to go to heaven. A lot of people say, I do puja, I want to go to heaven. Okay. If that is what you want, you will go there. And then, there is a gap. It's like superconductivity. You are below the gunas. he is guna atita, beyond the gunas. So if you want to go from here to there, that is not easy. It's almost like a Anjaneya leaping oceans. And he says, I watch you. I know it is difficult, but if you come up to there and you really want to go there, I'll give you a hand and pull you up. Something like that. That is available in Bhakti Marga.
Correct.
It is not available in the Upanishads.
Okay.
God says, my dear son, you have come out of me. I love you. In Upanishads, who says I love you?
There is no concept of love, sir.
No, there is no. It's abstraction, which is why many of Indian scientists used to take refuge there. Now they find it, they will not be in the club unless I deny God. So, first thing I do is, are you a scientist or no? If yes, you must deny God. If no, then you don't belong here. That's the way the world has decided. Have you got the idea? We have come through Prakriti.
Correct.
And those Prakriti's, these things have to be washed off through sadhana. Now, you can't do it all in one janma. It's not possible. Just, you know, you may be a genius, but you have to go to college, you have to get a degree, and at that time you can do something fantastic and change the world. So, the sadhana is scrubbing away your gunas.
This evolution from tamo to rajas to sattvic. So, in a sense, that is the process of purification of the mind. If
Absolutely. Okay. You see, for example, that is done in various ways in analogies. Mahishasura, half animal, half human. Okay?
Correct.
And then Devi's job is to kick him, because he has come from Devi but doesn't behave, so you teach him a lesson. So Devi does purification. Then she gets the strength to go and bump him off. Just as Arjuna had to do tapas and get the Shiva.
Correct.
So even Devi has to do these things. So that's what it means is, they are all rituals, but behind the rituals there is principle. So in this Kali Age I can't do this. Okay, very simple. Like our Dr. Narasimhan does in the Mobile Cafe Hospital. He comes and says, I will treat them free and all the stuff. But I will also go and tell them what is good, what is not good. He will, good habits and all that. There he is singularly alone.
Correct.
Others don't go with him.
Correct.
But he has been so influenced by Swami. He is passionate about that.
Correct.
He has saved a lot of lives by bulldozing his way into the hospital and bringing his own surgeons and so on and so forth.
So that service, in fact, that enables him to see the same divinity in everybody.
That is true. When a doctor comes and a patient is there, he doesn't do anything. His job is to save the patient. It happens more often than you think. For example, in America, there are a lot of this violence. A fellow comes and shoots everybody. He's shot. He doesn't die. And he's brought to the hospital. And the doctor said, I'll watch him die. No. His job is to save him. And also, many doctors don't want to do anything with the execution of people. They have nothing to do with it. You do on your own. So that is becoming a problem. Because they said, my job is to save lives, not take lives. At the same time, when the doctor is in the front, he has to have training of a soldier. Because somebody comes to attack him and he has to shoot him. One of the most difficult problems on the battlefield, I heard about this in Vietnam when the Americans went there. They have what are called paramedics. Two fellows are lying, they are bleeding, they are asking for help. They have to make a very difficult judgment because the military rule book says, if a fellow is very close to death, leave him alone. If this fellow can be saved, save him. Now, you have to play God there. So, it is following Dharma is not very easy. He doesn't want to do that. But what do you do? So, life gives very tough challenge. If you come up to death, next step will be higher.
Correct. That's the thing.
That's the problem.
As you are evolving the
challenge. So, that's why I say, Baba, I have come so close. Please take me. I don't want anything. And if you feel that, he will do it for you.
Exactly.
If you feel that way. So, janmas and all are necessary. You can't just... Rome was not built in a day.
Correct.
In fact, as we are talking about these three gunas, sattva, raja and tamas, many times people associate tamas with something not pleasant. Tamas is something to be abhorred and rajas is again something to be got rid of and sattva is what we should try and attain. Yes, to some extent that is true. But I remember in one discourse Swami said all three are necessary.
Absolutely.
All three are necessary.
You see, in fact, that reminds me of a strong dose of admonition that Vivekananda gave to his constant companion, a sadhu. I read this in a book which I took with me on one of my travels in the plane, long flight, I read that. I even marked it somewhere. He scolds him. He says, you have become a sannyasi, you are a parasite to society. You have gone to college, you have got a degree, why don't you go on to school and teach them? Let them learn geometry, trigonometry, science, biology, and let them become hard-working, let them make money, and let them become rich. At that time you teach Vedanta. Now you are worried about your moksha. What about moksha for them? And he says, I went to America because it was highly rajasic, so I wanted to convert them to Advaitam. In India, from tamas, they have to go to rajas first. Mm. He was very practical. You don't go to a fellow in the hut and say, I'll take, give you moksha. He doesn't want a moksha, he wants a job.
Absolutely. So what you actually need is a proper balance between all this.
See, this is tuning to reality. Oh, you don't go tell a starving man, Jagat Mithim, Brahma Satyam and all that. No? So you say, get lost. That is, that happens often. Mm. There is a famous story, the professor from London School of Economics goes to fisherwoman somewhere in London. She is selling fish and he is telling her about economic theory. And that lady asks, but professor, what has that got to do with the price of fish? He is trying to say that global demand is this or the price is going up. Mm. So, as Nehru often said, a starving man wants food. What are you scientists doing about it? He used to talk like that. That's real. That's absolutely real. Mm. That's why we started Gram Seva.
Yes.
Swami came and said, this can't happen in my country, our country. Woman gives poison because she can't feed. And so he started Gram Seva. So he was always very practical. We feed on the ground. That's what we need to do.
In fact, that again reminds me of one anecdote concerned with Swami Vivekananda, which probably I mentioned it before, but it is very much in terms of what you were saying now. So this young monk who is inside, sitting in his room and trying to meditate, and so one day he goes to Swami Vivekananda. This is when he has returned from the US and he was trying to inquire about all the monks and all that, and he says that, Master, I'm having a very difficult time. What happened? I have been trying to meditate and I have locked myself in the room, I've switched off the lights and I've been trying to concentrate and steady my mind. I've been doing it for days and days. It is just not happening. You have to guide me. And the Master says, I'll tell you what to do. You go to your room, you roll up that mat, you put on the light, open the door and go out and serve. Go out and serve the one who is on the street who doesn't have food. Go out and serve that little child who does not have a mother. Go out and serve that person who is dying. Go and serve. That is the first thing you have to do. So that is what, as we are talking about reality, that is
I'll go one step further. This is the way Swami fine-tuned the whole thing. If I go and talk Bhagavad Gita and all, say that's Hinduism and all that. He put it in four words. Love all. Serve all. Now, if you take the word love, we interpret it in a very narrow and limited sense. Because we are bound by the gunas. For him, love means prema. I love all. Samastha loka sukhino bhavantu. Sarva bhuta hiterata. So, from ant to the elephant, don't make a distinction.
Yes.
If it is nature, don't make a distinction. Because God is everywhere. All. It doesn't stop with one. Yes. Any species, all means all individuals, only members of my family, not your family, nothing of that sort. So it is all inclusive, it's highly telescopic. Sarva. What is the meaning of sarva? That is often conveniently interpreted. I'll tell you an actual story, incident, it's not a story. One day, Swami was giving a discourse on Shivaratri day. Before the event. In those days, Shivaratri used to be celebrated in the Purna Chandra Hall and there was no Lingodbhavam. It came later. Of course, there was a big gap in that thing. Yeah. Even Shivaratri, it was like that. Then what happened was, in the course of that talk, Swami scolded everybody. You all come here saying, I am going to serve you. All of you are only polishing the veranda. Not anything. Okay. Look, then he turned and said, Gopal Rao, look at this man. He's 8 years old. He came and asked me, what should I do, Swami? Go and serve in the canteen. So he went there in the canteen. They said, you serve water. So he serves water and all that. You should be ashamed of him and all that. In those days, I used to go and get food in the canteen. I was a teacher and all that. There was a man named Shastri, he's no more. He was in charge of the canteen. One day I went and said, oh, Swami has made my life miserable. I said, what happened? Swami scolded people on the veranda on Shivaratri day, and next day everybody comes. They say, we want water jugs. So I have only 2 or 3 water jugs. He said, why don't you serve sambar or sambar? No.
Swami told me water.
And then I said, don't worry, in 2 days they will all disappear. 3 days later I went, what happened to your water problem? He said, they all went away. He said, that is the world. Swami said this, so I will do only that. So, you go by the rule book. I don't know why I said, see, it's the spirit of the game. How do I do it?
Exactly.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Serve all. You are explaining serve all.
Serve all. Serve means that I can serve in whatever way is possible. But the whole purpose of, there is a sukshamam in the word serve. That is very important. First of all, manava seva, madhava seva. The word is seva. Now, this word seva can be interpreted in many ways. But I got the best idea of it from the South Indian Vaishnavites. If you go to a good Iyengar family, they all will say in Tamil, Tirupati poyane perumala sevichittu vandhen. That means I saw the Lord of Tirupati and I served him. So for them, having the darshan of the Lord is seva. Paramala Sevichana, he doesn't go and serve Paramala. What does he do? By the time he goes, he says, get out, move on, keep moving. I had the darshan of Paramala, God, Govinda. So, manava seva means, do you see God in that person? That is the real point. It is very difficult for me to see God in that person. Because I am used to, this so-and-so is a bad guy, is a good guy. At some point, if I really am evolved, I will not do that. So when I saw it this way, after a while, I began doing something. You know, I come from home, office, work, anything, college. There will be a seva, there you will say Sai Ram. I will also say Sai Ram. And then somehow it became an habit with me. I began to say E Vasudeva. It is sort of an automatic reflex. And then what I will do is, very often the prasadam they give, then I'll stop and talk to them. Where do you come from? And they will say something. Then I say, I've been there, I know this, that. And a friendly conversation. And they like it. Yes. 2-3 minutes. Somebody comes there and somebody does, they remember it. Very often I go. So say, I came and drove your van at that time. You gave me a laddu. How do I remember? But it makes a difference. it makes a difference. And that is because when they come, you give them respect and give them love. After all, the other day, somebody came. She is a lady who speaks in front of her house. Her daughter, birthday, she had dressed up all completely. So that little girl offered me sweets. So I called them inside and said, "You wait." Suddenly I remembered what Swami will do. I had kept some sweets, some chocolate somebody had given deep inside the fridge. I took that. Then I went and took some 50 rupee note, put a Swami's photo and said, "Swami, this is what you used to do. So let me do this." And that made me happy. This is how you made people happy. And that goes a long way. People remember it.
Yes.
So that is the way to multiply. So the word love all, serve all is deep and pregnant with meaning. Serve means serve God. Do I see God and serve Him? I say, "Oh, this fellow has come with some big laundry bill or something like that." So that is the... That is where you get what you call lot of things in the Bhagavad Gita. Because God comes and says, "Do this." I'm telling you,
yes.
What better tuition will you get?
Absolutely. In fact, Swami, as we are talking about love all, serve all, I mean, Swami simplified the whole thing for us. As Swami says, Ashtadeshu, Puraneshu, Vyasa, Vachanadvayam, where the essential meaning is help ever, hurt never.
It's not only that. This is the way to go to from the dual world to the mono. In other words, you change a zero-sum game into a win-win game.
Yes.
That's a management strategy. So
yes.
It is very necessary in this today's world when we are killing everything with unwittingly unhelpful activities.
Mm.
Just by consumption, we just don't realize what we are doing.
Mm. Wonderful. I think we have to now wind up this session because time is running out. There is so much more as we go on in this chapter 14 and which we'll take up in the coming sessions of Vahini Satsang. So dear listeners, if you're listening to us, please take your time and read the Prema Vahini chapter 14. I know there could be many more clarifications that you might want because this is not an easy chapter. But possibly if we pray to Bhagavan and meditate on what Swami has written, we will definitely get insights and also indications about how to live this in our life. So let's do that exercise, and as birthday approaches, let us see how we can make this love all, serve all a part of our life, at least to some extent. I think that is what will make Swami happy. That is what probably will be our tribute to Bhagwan, if we call ourselves our devotees, if we associate ourselves with Him. Thank you so much for being with us all through the session. And as always, if you have any queries or comments, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Offering our salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet and placing our gratitude for this opportunity, we bring this session to a close. Thank you so much. Sairam.
Deep.